This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
And a few Krispy Kremes.
And she's tucking into Krispy Kremes.
Oh, I've got a raspberry one now. So I had the chocolate one, but I've got a raspberry, which must mean one of my five a day, I think, because apparently it's got a filling of raspberries.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Okay. Paul and Jules, just when you thought I couldn't be crazier, on the 3rd of July, I and four other nutters from the BNI are jumping out of a plane to raise money for the brilliant Kenwood Trust. Here's a link to sponsor. We'd be grateful for a mention on the Business Bunker show. And the link is justgiving.com/campaign/5toskydive. It's like five go mad, isn't it? Or five go to the country.
Yeah.
Five to skydive. That's from Linda Cloak of We Do Social Media. So
can't believe she's doing that.
Thank you for doing that. Thank you for raising money. And you must be bonkers.
Yes, she must be. Wing walking next. So Tracy Ferguson says, really enjoyed the interview with Billy. Mm. He not only sounds like a nice man, he looks like one too.
Thank you very much. It's the Billy Dean's little Appreciation
fan
Society. Yeah.
And Lisa Settle says, good to have the visual.
There's Swanley Networking. We hope you can join us on the 15th of June, that's tomorrow, manana, for our next in-person meeting for Swanley focused businesses to be held at the Birchfield Heights Care Home, which only opened its doors a few weeks ago. You can book this by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar, and you can find all the details and the booking there. Right. We caught up with the lovely Vanessa Ugetti. Vanessa is known as the True Worth Expert, and we talked to Vanessa about valuing your time and your services as a professional service provider. Let's hear what she had to say.
Mm. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker show Vanessa Ugetti. Vanessa, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. A nice little smile there when I tried to pronounce your lovely Italian-sounding surname. I am sorry if I mangled that. It's a pleasure to see you. Vanessa, you're the True Worth Expert.
That's right, Paul. Well, good morning to you. Good afternoon. I'm not sure.
No, we've all lost the plot, don't worry. It's lovely to see you. Thank you so much for joining us. Let's kick off. Will you tell the listeners just a little bit about Vanessa? Give us a bit of your background and where you come from, business-wise.
My story, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, yes, I do have a story, actually, Paul. So going back quite a few years, I was involved in coaching and training professional service-based people.
Yep.
And around confidence, mindset, you know, the things that hold us back, those limiting beliefs that we have. And we all have them.
Sure.
And something was niggling in the back of my mind, but I didn't know what it was. And so I was on the computer looking for inspiration, as you do sometimes.
Mm.
And I stumbled across a marketing program for coaches. And I recognized the name of the person who was running this marketing program. I'd already met him, which was rather coincidental. So after quite a lot of procrastination and fear, because it was a lot of money, I signed up on the program.
Right.
And, you know, it is challenging making decisions in business when you're on your own, when you're a small business as well. So,
absolutely, yeah.
But anyway, I go by my gut. I always go guided by my gut. What does my gut say? If it's right, then I go for it. So on one of the initial workshops, they reminded us that we needed to have a niche. And I'd heard about niching, but I just didn't know what mine was at the time.
Mm.
And I certainly didn't know how to do it. And they asked us to write down on a piece of paper a list of all the interests that we had, whether it was a small interest or a big interest. So I scribbled a load of answers down, and I only remember one of them now. I can't remember what else I put. And that was something to do with valuing yourself or charging properly. But I had no idea, Paul, how that had got on the piece of paper. But the people running the workshop, who were obviously marketing experts, they said, that is marketable. And I said, okay, you're the experts on this. And it's really important, listeners, to listen to people who are experts, she says, as an expert in her own subject, because they've done the donkey work, if you like, and if we don't listen to experts, but you've got to choose correctly, obviously. So anyway, my gut instinct said, follow what they said. So off I went networking, you know, in the pre-COVID days when we did more face-to-face, in-person networking. And who do you find at those sorts of events? Well, lawyers, accountants, you know, consultants, financial advisors, those sorts of people. So I didn't know anything about the subject at this point. We're talking about 2013. So I was asking people what their challenges were around charging. And very quickly I discovered that undercharging, underestimating, discounting, and over-servicing were really commonplace problems amongst people who are highly competent, capable people, not newbies, not people who didn't know what they were doing, people who knew what they were doing in terms of their work, but not in terms of the business. So that was the first tick, the first indication I had that I was on the right track, that there actually was a problem. So then I came back and I looked at clients I'd been working with, and I discovered I'd already been helping some businesses on the charging front. Because if you think about it, if I was helping them with mindset and confidence, if they were lacking confidence in one area, charging was almost bound to be an area, because it is pretty, you know, it is a challenging subject. I'm not going to say to anybody it's easy. I'm a very honest person, by the way. I say things exactly as they are. It's probably my northern blood. I sound like a posh southerner, but actually I've got Yorkshire blood in me, and that makes me very direct in how I say things, but very straight. I call it very straight anyway. So that surprised me. I hadn't even realized I'd been helping people on the subject. And then the crunch came, and I decided to shine the spotlight on myself. And that was very painful, because that's when I realized exactly why my unconscious mind had come up with this subject, because it knew I was rubbish, hopeless, clueless, embarrassed about talking about money, and had no understanding of the value that I was giving my clients. And so it was what you call a light bulb moment when I realized why I needed to sort this problem out, because I needed to sort it out for myself. And I share this, you know, I share this story with no problem in front. I would share it in front of 5,000 people if there were, you know, if there was an audience of that, because I've overcome it. So it's not really an issue. And I believe in sharing honestly with people, because I think that's more inspirational for people to realize that everybody else isn't all sorted. Absolutely. And they might look great, but they haven't necessarily sorted everything, and they've had to go through lots of trouble.
Absolutely. And that's why I love your story. I absolutely love your story, because your starting point of this business was, oh, I don't know, let's try something. Let's write something on a piece of paper and see where it takes me. And, and the honesty of that is, a huge amount of people actually do start their businesses in that way, kind of feeling around, looking at something to do. And then in retrospect, when they're very successful in a few years' time, it all comes down to, well, I spotted a gap in the market and I did this and I did that. Whereas a lot of us, when we first start our business, we aren't too sure what we're going to do, and we're kind of experimenting with it.
Yeah, I mean, I felt very fortunate, and I haven't quite finished the story, but I'll answer that. I felt quite fortunate in the sense that I knew that it was my unconscious mind, or the subconscious mind, I use the two words interchangeably, that knew exactly what I needed to be doing. And although I felt fearful, I was willing to follow my heart. And I think that's, I don't know if that's a message that lots of people say, but I think it's really, really important that even though I felt scared and I didn't consciously know what was going on, subconsciously, because the subconscious mind is so much more powerful than the conscious mind, it knew exactly what was going on. So I wanted to just say how I was in a sales meeting, how awful I was. And I only shared this recently this week, because I was running a couple of workshops for a law firm in Somerset. And so a sales meeting, I would get a prospect in front of me. This would be a prospect, you know, just one person rather than a firm at the time. And they'd be telling me all their challenges. And I'm a heart-led person. Many people are heart-led, led by the heart. And I'd be trying to solve their problems. This is the sales meeting, because I had no clue about selling. I'd be trying to solve all the problems and giving them loads of stuff and totally bombarding them and probably overwhelming them and being clueless about it. And in the background, I knew that at some point I had to talk about money, but it was just such a horrible thought having to do that. I was so embarrassed about it that I would carry on these conversations and they'd get longer and longer. Then eventually I would say some paltry hourly rate. And then I would carry on talking because I was so scared of rejection. Mm. And I share that story because I know people are uncomfortable talking about money. Mine was very extreme. And that's why I am the best person to help people with this problem, because I know what it's like and I've solved the problem and I've solved it internally as well as externally. So
yeah,
it is what it is. That's what happened. That's my journey.
Absolutely. I mean, it is a perennial problem, isn't it, for hourly billers? You get these two issues, and I've been through this myself, where when you first start out, you're really not sure of the value of what you're doing in terms of what the market sees, but you're also desperate for customers. So you don't want to price yourself out of the market, but you tend to underprice yourself in the market. And a lot of us never realize that we could start high and go low, but you can't really start low and go high. And that's a big issue. And of course, we desperately want the business, and we want to get up and running, and we want to get going. So we tend to try and price things at a level that we think people will buy into.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, we're going to talk about this in a minute. But just as a personal story of mine, many, many, many years ago, I used to work as a motivational speaker on the international circuit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I got approached. And I worked all over the world in really exotic places and not so exotic places as well. And I got approached one week. Somebody sent me an email and they said, "Would you come and speak at an event in 2 weeks' time in Doncaster, in northern England, on a Friday evening?" Oh, no, I really don't want to do that. It's not really where I want to go on a Friday evening to speak for a couple of hours. But I didn't want to turn them down. So I said, "Yes, of course." And they said, "How much?" So I quadrupled my price. And they went, "Yeah, fine." I went, "Oh."
Yeah.
And two things. Show me, one, you've got to be more honest up front. If you don't want to do it, say no. But two, if they were prepared to pay that, then surely other people were prepared to pay it too. And I suddenly realized that I've been underpricing myself for quite a long time. Yeah. So, you know, that's how it works. So let's move on and hear from you now in terms of what you're telling people about and how you're helping people to come to terms with pricing themselves correctly.
Yes, there's a tiny bit more to the story, but
yeah, go with it. Yeah.
Perfectly with the question you've just asked. Mm. And that is, you know, when you're in bed and you're half awake or half asleep, you know, that's quite dozy time. Well, that's when the conscious mind's gone to sleep, but the subconscious mind is still awake. A formula appeared in my mind. And it sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie or something, but this is the truth. And this formula was UV, understand your value, plus CV, communicate your value, plus CD, confident delivering fees, equals CW, charging what you're worth. In fact, to be totally honest, I got the first two bits and the extra bit I added on. The weird thing was that I knew when I saw it, perceived it, I knew exactly what it meant,
right.
Exactly what it meant, and I don't know how, and I knew it was correct. So then, that's when I started, with help, of course, working on this stuff, and then I created my little True Worth book. But over the last two or three years, I've been working, working on the business as well, in terms of creating something which is all encompassing of that sales process.
Right.
And that is now called True Worth. I mean, it already was. So the original formula of those three bits has been expanded into True Worth. And I'm not going to run through and tell you what every bit means, but it does cover the whole thing. And the aim is to not just be charging effectively, but creating balance in people's lives. So they're not running around like headless chickens, working with people who don't value them and treat them badly. Mm. They're being discerning about who they work with, charging effectively, thinking about the business, you know, creating value for the client, yes, but thinking about their business and thinking about themselves. Mm. So I think that model fits so perfectly in this time, particularly, that we've been going through, where we've had a lot of stress in our lives and there's been a lot of fear pumped out by the media. Mm. To have something where you can say, yes, instead of me acting out of my subconscious mind and discounting people and doing all those bad behaviors that make me feel rubbish, I'm going to be conscious in how I operate on this business front. And I'm going to be as good at that as I am at the work that I do for my clients.
Right. Okay. I mean, it's a fascinating look at this, because it is something that affects so many people in terms of, and like, one of the things that really struck me about what you said was, it's actually about your life balance as well, isn't it? If you continually undercharge for what you do, you've got to work twice as hard.
Absolutely.
And find twice as many customers to get to the same point.
Yes. And what happens to people's confidence, their self-worth, because everything, you know, the heart of all this work is self-worth, and because self-worth is at the heart of everything we do. Sure. The challenge, and self-worth has got nothing to do with people's competence, nothing to do with their intelligence, nothing to do with their experience or their expertise. So they can be brilliant at what they're doing and rubbish at valuing themselves. Mm. But it is it's a completely separate thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And as I said, you know, so many people get so nervous about just needing to get a client that they'll price themselves at a ridiculous price, a ridiculously low price, just to get the client, without thinking about, well, is that worth it? You know, is it worth my time? Is it worth my expertise? No. Is it doing anything for me in the long term?
No, and what's it doing to their confidence? Because confidence goes down, and actually, I've written lots of stuff on this, you know, posts and things about desperation and so on, because desperation just pushes people away, doesn't it? And then if you've done it once, if you've lowered your price once, then it's easy to do it again and again and again. Mm. And as you said earlier on, Paul, to go from low to high is very, very difficult. So then if people start off being low, then they'll take them years to be able to get to a place where they need to be. That's the challenge we have.
Okay. When you're advising people on how to do this, is it mainly through workshops and training programs?
So it would be training, workshops, but workshop and coaching,
right,
rather than just delivering a workshop and then walking away. What I like to do is package it up and make sure that if I'm doing a workshop, then they know at the beginning of the workshop or even beforehand that there's going to be follow-up session, and they know right at the beginning that they're going to need to take new actions, because doing a workshop is great. You can learn the subject and you can get people discussing it and what have you. But the key is to changing behavior. And so they need to take new action. So I always make sure people know that. And then in the follow-up session, they know that I'm going to be going around the room. I usually do that online, the follow-up stuff anyway. Go around the room and ask each person, what was the action that you agreed? What were your wins? What were your challenges? What were your insights?
Yeah.
And then you get, and everybody gets a chance to speak. I'm not doing huge numbers of people because I'm looking to help people really shift. And I also set it up so people understand when they are doing this work, it's not just about the business gaining financially. It's about the person gaining personally in terms of their confidence levels and how they approach stuff. And some of the stuff I teach, they can use in their personal lives. It's not just about business. So as I say, I'm always looking at that balance. I always use a triangle. That's why I'm drawing a picture in the air.
You're absolutely right. And of course, as you've said a couple of times, this isn't just about monetary value. It's about valuing yourself. It's about valuing your expertise. It's about valuing your time. And it, actually, it's also about valuing your clients.
Yes, it is. Because if you are working with the right clients and charging properly, you can serve them better.
Absolutely.
You can serve them better. If you're working with all and sundry, there was a brilliant phrase I heard from a lawyer years ago, a very experienced boy, and he mentioned the phrase hunting on the prairie. And, you know, some people have been infused with this thing of you've got to hunt on the prairie. And I say, why would you want to catch scrag end? Yeah. You know, surely it's better to be discerning and choose some decent clients, do less work, charge better. Mm. So you're actually better off every way. And the client then is better off because you serve them better and you're in a better place as well. Yeah. Emotionally, you know, you're not so stretched, not running around. If people are working too hard for too little money, they're much more likely to make mistakes as well. And there's one thing that is really horrible, and that is resentment. Mm. Because when people are not charging properly, they normally know they're not, and there is resentment, and you can't help it. We're human beings. Yeah. They feel resentful because there's a part of them that actually realizes they shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And of course they look at their earnings and they think, is this worth my while? And it comes back to everything you said, Vanessa, about, you know, valuing yourself and your own self-worth. And I think that is the major point of this, is that it isn't about the financial side of it per se. It's about the valuation of it in the round, all of it.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. And it's understanding. So people have to, so from Trueworth, obviously one of them is understand your value. People don't understand their value because if they're doing something, which usually when people set up a business, normally they're doing something that they do know what they're doing.
Yeah,
they don't necessarily do it the way I've done it, but I've never done anything the normal way anyway in my life, so it just isn't me. And they don't understand their value because if they've been doing something for a long time, then their value is unconscious or subconscious.
Yeah,
so they take it for granted. Mm. So I use a great analogy with this. You know, I guess you drive a car. Mm. Is that right?
Yeah,
and you've been driving more than 3 or 4 years.
Yep.
So you will have had the following experience for sure. You get in your car, you go on a journey you've been on many times before, Paul, and you get to your destination, and then you realise you have no recollection of the journey whatsoever. Have you had that experience?
Oh, I have, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's an international experience. You could ask anybody anywhere in the world,
yeah,
and they would say, yes, they've had that experience. Mm. So that is, at that point, you're unconsciously competent. Mm. So your subconscious mind is driving for you. And yep, you don't need to be consciously thinking. But the moment that happens, you devalue it because you take it for granted. And you don't get out of your car and go, oh, my God, didn't I drive so brilliantly? You just get out of your car. So when you think about people's expertise and they, you know, like I'm talking now, I could talk about my subject till the cows come home. And it's really easy for me. Mm. But that's because it's an expertise. So it's easy for me to devalue that and think, well, everybody knows this, don't they? But everybody doesn't know it.
No, exactly. Yeah, exactly right.
And it doesn't matter what service people have. Mm. People come to you because you've got an expertise that they don't have. Mm. And you have to get in touch with that expertise consciously in order to be able to help you. That's just one of the things, to be able to help you to charge more effectively. But people don't know their value.
Absolutely. Vanessa, it's been fascinating talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us and telling us your story and telling us about the true worth that people have and your true worth expertise. If people want to find out more about you and your workshops and your trainings and your coaching, what's the best way to do that?
So they can Google me, Vanessa Ugatti. They can go to my website, thetrueworthexpert.com. They can find me on LinkedIn. I am the only Vanessa Ugatti in the world, I believe.
Really?
So you won't have a problem finding me. And if you know people looking for a keynote speaker, which is another side of the separate side of the business, then that's just vanessaugatti.com.
Fantastic. We will put both those links onto the Business Funkle Radio website. We thank you so much for speaking with us and joining us this afternoon on the show. Vanessa, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Thank you so much.
It's fantastic. Thank you, Paul.
Lauch Associates Group can help you with your employment law, HR, health and well-being, and mediation needs. People are our business. It's what we do every day. Find us online at lochassociates.co.uk.
Become part of our community to build your social media habits with Workouts. Increase your brand's presence and engagement. Go to wedosocialmedia.co.uk to register for 2 free social media workouts every Wednesday. 10:30 a.m. Facebook and 11:30 a.m. LinkedIn.
Tallis Independent Financial Advisors can help you invest, organise your pensions, and even get you the best possible life insurance, mortgage, or equity release deal. Check out talisifa.com.
That was a fantastic interview with Vanessa Ugetti, the True Worth expert. It's an interesting topic, isn't it? Valuing yourself as a professional service provider.
Of course. And I and Tracy was saying, on Twitter at Tazy, 69, isn't it? I've forgotten, 64, whatever. she was saying it's so good that she gives a follow-up, Vanessa. It's Tazy 64. I was right.
It is, yeah.
There's no need to titter.
I knew what it was. I was just laughing at you.
Yeah, well, hopeful, wishful thinking.
Yeah.
Great that Vanessa offers follow-ups. Most people get motivated in an event or a workshop and then often don't utilise the knowledge gained.
Oh, without a doubt, Tracy, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
She's good.
That's a big thing, isn't it? If people get excited on a workshop and then they go back into their day-to-day work and forget to implement it. Okay, what have you got?
Well, Tenterden has been named as one of 90 micro clusters.
Oh, yeah, I saw
whatever
that.
Whatever a micro cluster might be. What is a micro cluster?
Well, it's places where things happen. Yeah.
Well, I thought it might be. I thought it might be a case of monkeypox. You have to be careful nowadays, you see.
Yeah, yeah.
So a little micro cluster. Does that mean SMEs as well, little businesses clustering together?
Mm-hmm.
Tenterden's been named as one of 90 micro clusters in the UK where creative businesses are thriving.
Mm.
It is one of only 4 places named in Kent.
Mm-hmm.
Tenterden is a hub for creative and independent businesses. It's cultural events. Of course, they've got the amazing Tenterden Festival. They have a regular creative market. And the Sinden Theatre as well, which brings audiences in from the borough and across the county. And the town's also got a cultural heritage with Smallhive Place, the former home of Dame Ellen Terry, who was an iconic actress in the Victorian period.
Do you know who the last person to perform on the stage there was?
Who?
Oscar Wilde.
Really? Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh, what history. And now Billy Dean's, you're in the theatre, aren't you?
I certainly
darling.
Am. Still doing drama lessons as well.
Yes.
Are you into Andram, are you?
And on a professional side as well. I was actually an extra in Downton Abbey.
Were you at
I was in Oxfordshire in Bampton.
Who were you then?
I was an extra.
Were you a butler?
Supporting artist.
No, but you might have bumped into my youngest son, Stuart. He was a runner on the show.
Was he?
Yeah.
I may well have done. I had a nickname of Compo from last summer. They couldn't find a belt for me, so they just tied me up with string.
Oh, right, okay. I know, Stuart works on Downton Abbey.
Yeah,
Highclere House, isn't it? Yeah.
There have been so many now, haven't there? Because there's 2 feature films now.
Yes, there was, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So he is an actor, Billy Dean.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm part of the Actors Studio over in Canterbury as well.
Oh, are you?
I am.
Because you know my neighbour, don't you, Wendy, with the little...
Yes, I know Wendy very
Labrador.
Well.
Yes.
Because... my son Stuart was at the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School. That's where he went. And he is right at this moment, as we speak, he is in Los Angeles, staying with Eileen Davidson, who is the star of Housewives of Beverly Hills, because Duke Van Patten, her stepson, is one of Stuart's great mates.
Wow. Well, your stew gets around, doesn't
he? He does get around a bit, yeah.
Yeah. But Downton Abbey, I love Downton Abbey. I've tried to get into, what's this new one, the Bonk?
Bridgerton.
Yeah, I can't get into it. Mm. I find it a bit hammy.
Yeah.
It's historically, it's not very accurate either. I think that puts a lot of people off.
I find it just a bit hammy. I don't know why. And I just love Downton Abbey. I've watched Downton Abbey over and over again. It's my sort of TLC comfort
blanket.
Next
time you watch it, keep out for me in the background.
I will.
I'm a soldier in one of the scenes, I think. On a bus in another.
But coming back to Smallhive Place, which is what started this, which was Ellen Terry's home, she just had a small theatre built in the garden, and she used to stage her own plays there. and she staged the thingy in earnest.
Shakespeare. Oh, Importance of Being Earnest.
That's him.
Do you like the way he does that in a Shakespearean way?
Yeah. The Importance of Being Earnest, and Oscar Wilde
actually
performed in it for her there.
I just watched a remake of Far From the Madding Cloud.
Cloud. Was that Apple or Cloud?
which was, of course, Thomas Hardy. But that was rather comforting to watch. That had, what's her name in it, that lovely Carey Mulligan. And that was lovely the other day. It was a little comfort blanket. New husband hates period dramas. So when he's working in the evening, if he slopes off in the day and does his paddle boarding or his windsurfing, it works in him. He says, you can have a period drama night tonight.
Very nice of him.
Yeah, I love a period drama.
Only one day to go until our sold-out Needs in Kent Conference 2022. In the afternoon, we've organised breakout sessions on the five priority areas of need in Kent, identified in our recent research. These areas are domestic abuse, food poverty, mental health, substance misuse, and low income benefits. The breakout rooms are an opportunity to hear from experts from within the voluntary sector and from some much needed peer-to-peer discussions. The breakout room speakers are Henu Cummings of DAVSS, Martin Ward of the Food Bank Canterbury, Ellie Williams of Takeoff, and Penny Williams, who's the Marketing Strategy Business Development for Kenwood Trust.
Hang on, Ellie Williams and Penny Williams, did you say?
Yeah, not related, Ellie and Penny. And then Angela Doggett from Be Change. Which room will you be joining? Let us know in the comments. Check out the agenda for today and all of our speakers here by going to kentcf.org.uk/KCF conference.
And 660 parking spaces, a gym, restaurant and a gaming area. Ashford is home to Europe's largest lorry park. Ashford International Truck Stop used to have 410 spaces, but in December, the facility in Sevington, which I whiz by that most days, coming here, they have expanded and they've moved from its old site to a bigger space next door. The move came as part of a £34 million investment, which upgraded facilities such as the coffee shop, the bar and a restaurant, and saw the installation of six accommodation rooms for truckers looking for a place to rest, as opposed to just lining up on the motorway. Just down the road is the Sevington Inland Border facility, where drivers can process customs paperwork for the goods they are transporting. I was thinking about, Billy, when you said about technology and paperwork and stuff. I was trying to change my bank account in Spain, and they love papers. So my new husband and I, in order to do it, went to Ibiza, to not Santander, the other one.
Bank Inter.
No, the other one. Anyway, it'll come to me. And we had to, she just kept saying, sign this, sign this, sign this. And we were going, how many? There were like eight pieces of paper for each of us. 16 pieces. And I said, is it necessary to sign all these? Yes, you must do this only on a Tuesday, and on a Wednesday you must do this. It's like technology. No.
She's Russian, was she?
Somebody loved my Spanish accent the other day.
That wasn't Spanish. No. Just tell me, that was not remotely
Spanish. She's
spent
a lot of time in Moscow.
Talking about technology, one of the things about technology which I was rattling on about earlier is unthought out consequences of things you do. So here's the thing: in September this year, the European Union rolled out the ESS system, which is the entry and exit system, which is a system that takes biometric data from your passport, so that they don't need to man any of the gates and they don't get queues anymore. You just walk up, show your passport and your face, because it's a facial recognition system, and it lets you through.
Yeah.
The thing they didn't think about was that works brilliantly at airports. It's utterly crap at ferries.
Why?
Because people on ferries are in cars, and you normally have four people in a car.
Yeah.
So now every car's got to stop, and the entire occupants have got to get out.
Or a coach. Imagine that.
Exactly. And they've all got to get out and be biometrically tested. So it's actually going to make each crossing at least 3 minutes longer than it currently is, when it's supposed to save time.
What are they going to do about it?
Well, nothing, because they hadn't thought about it. The people at Dover Docks are going, mad and going, this is ridiculous, it doesn't work for us. It works at an airport, it's
how
perfect.
Did it work previously on the ferries? Obviously, you had a coach of people with passports.
Yeah, they must have done the same thing.
All that happened is that all the passports were collected in one big thing, and the driver would go, here you go. Right,
oh, yeah, okay. That makes sense.
Because when you drive into either the docks or the Eurotunnel, it's all AMPR. Yeah. Generated, and it's all ticket generated, and you have to pre-put your passport in, so that when you drive in, it checks your number plate and it goes, right, the 42 people on your coach, these are their passports. Mm. So all you have to do is go, yep, there you go. Yeah,
maybe they should do it in advance, so like the coach company, for example, a big lorry, sends it all on to them in advance. Mm. Digitally.
Yeah, no, but the point, yeah, but then how do you know the person crossing the border is the same person?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the problem.
Someone in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. So if it was me, I'd stick to the old system, because the old system works at a port. Mm. Yeah, I wouldn't roll out the new system, because it just doesn't work for roll-on, roll-off ferries.
Technology brain going, how can I solve this problem?
Yeah.
Can I use NFC? You cannot work.
if any listeners are listening with a bit of cash, Billy Dean has got a great idea about dog theft to prevent dog theft. So that's another show, but you can get in touch with Billy if you want to know about that. I was going to say that the first flight to Rwanda is going off with the migrants. Mm. They've got seven, so I thought, and half of them, probably their lawyers will whisk them off at the end.
Yeah.
So are they putting on a flight just for seven people?
Yeah.
That's bananas. And my question is, this is another show, but still, why are they not going back to stopping them in France?
I've asked so many people, and
the same thing.
And I get the most waffly answers to this all the time. Why isn't there? And it's not just us. This doesn't happen anywhere. Why is there not an asylum check-in centre in the country that you're in? Why do you have to come here to be checked?
Yeah.
Why can't in Calais, why can't you have a border post?
Yeah.
I mean, because British customs man the border posts in Calais.
Yeah.
And French customs man the border posts
in Dover.
So why
don't they...
Why can't you have an asylum centre, not at the docks, because it would be too crowded.
Yeah.
But why can't you have an asylum centre in France, in northern France, where you go, right, if you want to come across here, rather than use a people trafficker, come to the centre and apply for asylum.
Well,
essentially, isn't that what they're doing, Ashford, with the inland border facility for checking...
Lorry drivers.
For checking lorry drivers, yeah. It's
so
great.
It'd be
for
the same thing, but
the other side.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, where they did their little camp, do you remember what was it called that they kept this
spanning?
Sangetti. Why don't they build one there? Where they can stay and be fed and watered and apply.
And not take the risk of crossing.
Coming across the with their babies.
I've asked this so many times. I mean, for a while... I might be wrong about this. I can't remember whether it was Syria or Lebanon, somewhere. One of those places where there were a lot of refugees, we actually had an asylum centre in the country that said, you don't have to go anywhere. You come to the asylum centre and apply for asylum here. Mm. And then we took it out. And I for the life of me, I don't understand. You know, a lot of people are annoyed about this Rwanda thing. I just can't get my head around it. I can't get my head around
it. It doesn't make sense to pay all that money for
I can't get my head around how any of this works or doesn't work, and why they won't do straightforward things.
Exactly.
I didn't come on this show to be political, but I think because it makes it easier for them. It's the same as the reason why we're not...
What, easier for them to...
Well, we're not getting Ukrainians coming to this country at the moment, because they've made it too difficult for the application, for the process.
Mm. Yeah,
and by moving that facility to France, we're making it easier for them, so therefore you're getting more people applying,
so
there'll be more work.
Yeah.
Mm.
Crazy stuff.
It is bonkers.
Anyway, tonight...
And I'd love a Syrian to come in, because they're the best food. Syrian Lebanese is the best food ever.
Oh...
It really is. I mean, forget your Turkish, your Syrian and your Lebanese. Best food ever.
We haven't got long. Stu, my youngest, and I went for a Lebanese meal once in London. And Stu went, I'll order. And we had Margaux sausages or whatever they are.
That's him. Baba ganoush.
That's him. Yeah, they're gorgeous. Anyway, hummus. Stu ordered this bowl of hummus.
Yeah.
And it said it's got chicken in it. So I'm thinking, right. It's got hummus with chicken. It actually had a whole chicken.
Wow.
A whole roasted chicken under the hummus.
Wow, that sounds very good.
Nah, it was we two of us tried to eat that
whole chicken. Well, I've just seen you eat. No, I haven't. I haven't seen
no, you
eat
haven't.
Any Krispy Kreme.
No, you haven't.
Amanda, not one has crossed his little lips.
Anyway, as I was saying, there's a Gravesham Business Network this evening. At 5 p.m. the Gravesham Business Networking Meets. It's open to all SMEs in the area, so come and join us. Our summer business networking event will be held at the new Legion Rooms venue as part of the India Supper Club. For those with a love of authentic Indian Punjabi cuisine,
yes.
Whether you're an established local business, have just started, or are new to the area, please do come along and enjoy an evening of local networking at one of Gravesend's most prestigious venues. The last networking event we had over 50 businesses there, so well worthwhile. If you want to find out about it, kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar.
This is interesting for Whitstable Bubble people. The owners of a beloved bookshop, this is one that I love, Oxford Street Books in Whitstable.
Lovely Tizzy.
Yes, exactly.
She's a theatre girl.
Well, they were forced to close, Billy, due to rocketing rent prices, and they've reopened. This is why the chains are coming in, of course. They've reopened a store in the long-empty former waiting room at Whitstable Railway Station. Did you know that?
No, I haven't.
Oxford Street Books has been managed by Tiziana Mazzoli. A little bit of Italian there, I think.
Isn't that a cooking oil?
And her partner, Michael Dowling, I've met Michael, for 5 years, but served as a bookshop for about 17, and the duo announced they were reluctantly vacating their premises last year, and they closed the store on October the 3rd. I think it's now a pizza place or something, I can't remember.
Because the rates in Whitstable were
crazy. Well, look at Canterbury as well. After 8 months, they've finally opened Books in Waiting, what a good name, in the former waiting room on the station's London-bound platform, which closed more than 20 years ago. Why would they leave something empty for 20 years?
Oh, tell me about it. I think you've got an email about the library in Maidstone, which they've just demolished after about 20 years of leaving it empty as well.
Well, Mr. Dowling said, I was walking on the platform in September and thought the room would make a nice shop. So it's launched last Saturday. Its opening hours are 9:30 to 6 on Monday, Thursday and Friday, and 9:30 to 6:30 on Saturday, and 2:30 to 5 p.m. on a Sunday. I will hop along and see them. I'll give them a copy of my new husband's book.
Fantastic. There's Kent Virtual Networking on Wednesday the 29th of June, 4 to 5 p.m, hosted by Mary Eniolu. The Kent events are relaxed networking with like-minded business owners, and everyone is welcome. You can join in this Kent, it's online as well. So if you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar, you will find all the details there.
And this is interesting. National Express has launched a new airport bus service connecting the county with Stansted Airport. The service will start at Canterbury before calling at Maidstone, Chatham, Bluewater and Stratford. Operated by Medway base the King's Ferry, part of the National Express Group since 2007, the number 260 bus service will run six times a day, with fares starting from £8.50 one way from Canterbury. It takes about 3 hours and 25 minutes. Why does it take 3 hours?
Oh, stops.
This is always the drawback.
But I think if I'm right, they've got Wi-Fi on board, so it's all good.
Yeah.
But 3 hours and 25 minutes, yeah, I'd have to go to the loo.
Think of all those poker stops.
Well, they've probably got a loo as well, haven't they?
What was that?
All those poker stops you can swipe as you pass.
Poker stop. What is a poker stop? See, gaming. Is that gaming?
Yeah.
I don't gamble, Willie, except Billy.
Yeah, you see.
It's a one-way brain. You know what it is?
Yeah.
It's those Krispy Kremes.
Yeah, yeah, it's
like,
got you, isn't it? You've had a sugar overdose.
Sugar?
Yeah. Actually, though, if you think about it, it's not bad, because the only other way to get to Stansted is to go to London and then come out of London.
Well, interestingly enough, I was just getting a quote for Stansted with Chesfield cars that I've used quite a lot, and they're astronomical because of the petrol. They've just put their price up.
Would be, yeah.
It was like over £290 or something.
Yeah, well, exactly.
And in terms of cost,
bonkers.
How much is the Dover Crossing now? Because you're going to have to pay that as part of it.
Yeah,
I was for £8.50 one way. It's a no-brainer, isn't it?
Yeah, it's too quick. Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. And actually, it's slower, but it probably isn't that much slower.
No, I suppose once you've got on, I would allow 2 hours driving because of traffic.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because you can't miss a flight, can you?
Yeah.
Sorry,
a few months. You were talking about my stew being all over the place.
Yeah,
which
in a good way.
Yeah, well, a couple of months ago, he was going somewhere. I can't remember where. It was somewhere for work, and he had to travel on a Saturday, and he had he had tickets from Stansted Airport, and he went to try and book a journey there, and he tried to book a cab, and they wanted like 200 quid, and he went, I'm not paying that.
Yeah.
So I'll buy a train ticket, and he went to buy a train ticket, and they said, oh no, the railway shut that day. So the only way to get there was a bus. Yeah, and he went to the bus station and they said, what time is your flight? And he went, 2 o'clock, and they went, well, you're missing that then. And he went, it's only 10 o'clock. And they said, yeah, the motorway's closed. God. We have to go around in a big loop.
Oh, my goodness. Which motorway was that then?
M11.
God. I actually dread, my new husband went to North London on Sunday. I stayed at home with the dog because she can't be left, as you know. She chews things. But he,
a bit like Jules.
It took him ages. I only chew Krispy Kremes. It took him ages because the traffic. But the traffic's bonkers.
Oh, right. Was that it?
Yeah, no.
Okay. Making tax digital readiness reminder. HMRC is reminding all VAT registered businesses which have not yet signed up for Making Tax Digital for VAT to take action now to avoid penalties. Oh, here we go. All VAT registered businesses, regardless of turnover, must now follow Making Tax Digital rules. HMRC has published a guide on how to start the process and is also running a series of webinars. And that's going to work well, isn't it? If you want to have a look at this, then www.gov.uk/guidance when to start using Making Tax Digital.
I was just thinking, sorry, I'm just thinking about this thing, King's Ferry.
You're thinking about this thing, I know, you blurted it out earlier.
King's Ferry, because it's all very well, but then these often, you know, you've got a flight, and then I would think, are they going to run it? Are they going to cancel it? Will their driver turn up? Will he be sick? Will he have COVID? Will he have... Do you know what I mean?
Well, it's like anything, though, isn't it? I mean, you
Can't, but if you drive yourself, it's not, because you know you get
true,
the car.
True, yeah, but then you've got to wear the cost of driving there and parking there for a week.
Yeah.
That's what...
And also leaving your car in a strange car park.
Yeah. Or you could leave it with one of those parking companies that just, you know, rent it out for the week while you're away.
Yeah. I know what to do with that. I take my old Honda that nobody would really want.
Yeah.
So there's a heritage event support at Leeds Castle. It's a charitable foundation. Every year a charity benefits from a collection raised at the Leeds Castle concert. And this year they've chosen the heritage events have chosen the Leeds Castle Charitable Foundation. Let's see when this is. So it's on Saturday the 9th of July. That's the highlight of the Kent Social Party calendar. And you can book tickets for the Leeds Castle concert by going to www.leedscastleconcert.co.uk. Picnic tickets are priced at £52 a person. Does that mean food, or you bring your own food?
You can take your own food.
Okay. I'd wanted to know what the £52 brings for you. Yeah. I'm assuming it's for the music and stuff, and that you bring your own food. Mm. So it doesn't say who's on, but you can go onto the website and have a look. Brachers, who are a leading law firm in Kent, are sponsoring it. But all details of everything on this show will be on kentbusinessradio.co.uk after the show.
Cool.
You can look there.
New to the Leeds Castle concert this year will be two fantastic male soloists. John Robbins, joined by Timothy Richards, who is crossing the channel to perform at the event on Saturday the 9th of July. British stage actor John Robbins has a string of credits to his name, including the roles of Princeton and Rod in Avenue Q, the musical, and more recently Jean Valjean in Les Miserables in London's West End. This will be John's debut appearance, and we can't wait to experience his performance. And then travelling all the way from Germany to join John on stage is critically acclaimed Welsh tenor Timothy Richards, who is now recognised as one of Europe's leading lyrico-spinto tenors. I don't know what that means.
Lyrico-spinto?
Yeah. Do you know what that means?
No. I'm sure somebody listening will Google it.
Yeah. Anyway, soon after graduating, Timothy made his professional operatic debut in 1998 as Alfredo in La Traviata for Welsh National Opera. This quickly led to invitations to perform in Semper Opera, Dresden, Oslo and Spoleto. After these early successes, he found himself in demand to sing the leading Spinetto tenor roles in many of Europe's great opera houses. You can find out all about the concert by going to leedscastleconcert.co.uk.
All of that sounds like ice cream to me.
Absolutely.
Spinetto, yeah. Cornetto. Very Italian. Well done.
Mm.
So your library is more than 100 budding entrepreneurs have been helped by a business advice network, which is set up at the Kent History and Library Centre in Maidstone. Was that your one that you wanted?
No, there was something
There's
else.
There's a lot of library stuff going on.
Yeah, there is.
So the Kent Library's Business and IP Centre is part of the British Library's national network of centres across the country. They've been set up to advise startup ventures, inventors, there you are, Billy, you can go on that. Go there and ask them, and anyone with a business idea on how to make their dream a reality. First start in October, after receiving $627,000 of government funding, the centre was officially opened this month. It offers the opportunity for one-to-one consultation sessions and practical business advice. You could team up with some wealthy vets.
You could. Good,
yeah. Vets make money. Idea. I do.
Cool. What else you got?
Well, how long we got?
2 minutes.
Council, I don't like to gabble, but Councillor David Burton, leader of Maidstone Borough Council, has set out the ambition to initially acquire 1,000 houses.
That's the one I was talking about, yeah.
Under MBC ownership, Maidstone Borough Council, in other words, and control which will be reserved for Maidstone people at affordable rents. The policy move has cross-party support. David said, I'm really pleased that we've managed to acquire this site. So it's... I don't know what the site is.
It's the old library.
Oh, it is. So they bought the old library to turn it into... Well, yeah. Okay. The private sales and private rental market is simply beyond the reach of many, so the council needs to increase its own stock. Did you hear on the news about the government want people that are on social benefits to be able to buy their own house?
Yeah.
Which was a great idea, except... Because I guess they realise that they'll be paying for them forever, you know.
Yeah,
they...
it's the maintenance cost of going from there. I think it's a bit of a...
And also, how do they get the deposit?
Well, I mean, the whole thing just it makes no logical sense to me at all. I don't know how they're going to organise that.
I think it's a thing to keep it's, Boris, you
it,
know.
Yeah, it just sounds like political fudge.
Yeah, something they say never come to action, and they're probably basing it on the whole, I think it was Margaret Thatcher that sold off the council houses.
Yeah. I mean, that's the rationale. People buying the house they lived in is kind of sensible.
It's lovely,
But giving someone a mortgage... They had to apply for their own mortgages. Just giving someone a mortgage on benefits, how's that ever going to work?
Exactly.
The government, that just means the government's paying themselves. So why would you do that? Why not invest more in social housing?
Exactly. But also people in private rental who are working, but, you know, paying ridiculous rents of 1,000 whatever, possibly they could be helped. Because often they can't get mortgages, but they're paying what they would be paying on a mortgage.
It's all nonsense.
There's another show, Paul.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, we've reached the end of this week's show. I want to say a huge thank you to DG East for sponsoring the show, to our two fantastic guests, Mr. Billy Dean of SOS Technical Services.
Thank you for having me.
Vanessa Ugatti, the True Worth expert, to my gorgeous co-host, Jill Sirkin. We'll be back with another show next week. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.